Okay, Ron. Thank you very much. Thank you for opening for us in prayer. And we're going to get back in Isaiah 1. I wanted to do the entire chapter of Isaiah 1 because it's a kind of a combination, if you or a collection, if you will, of the things that you're normally going to find in the entire book. And I felt it was pretty necessary that we would take up Isaiah 1, although our word of the study walk, and by the way, this is the 46th study in walk, and we're just have made it up to Isaiah. And this is July the 29th, 2015. And as I said, study 46. And when you look at what Isaiah is saying here, and he gets it two ways. He gets it by a vision, and he also gets it by word of mouth, what he's saying. And again, I want to stress that the book of Isaiah, or the scroll of Isaiah, is basically divided into two sections. One is chapter 1 through chapter 39, again. And then that's called the former part, and it deals with all of the prophets that God gave voice to up to Isaiah. And then Isaiah is kind of in the middle of all this. And then from chapter 40 through chapter 66 deals with the rest of the book of Isaiah, and it also kind of entails many of the other minor prophets concerning the Messiah and the Messiah coming. And it deals with basically the main theme there of the coming one, the one that was promised. And there is 85 places that it's quoted in the New Testament. I believe it's like 61 or something, and there's 24 places it either doubles up or triples up on. And quoted in more than one place, to put it that way. And so that's the way the book shakes out. And there is so much information in this, because it is, actually, it is Jehovah making an indictment against the nation of Israel. And he doesn't leave much out of an indictment when he
calls them out.
You know, goes to really putting it on their head. And it's also used kind of as Jerusalem as being a vineyard, or Zion, they call it, Jerusalem. Used as being as a vineyard that has been planted and has bared fruit, and then it was abandoned. Because the way it was when Solomon built it, after David's death, Solomon built it, then it got overran probably several times. I'm thinking that the temple has been ransacked, I believe, as far as I can remember, 27 times. We went over this somewhere. And it seems like the 28th time that it's going to be rebuilt will be the final time. And, you know, those people that are over there now are saying that they're going to build the temple back. That's the hope that they have of building the temple back, but they don't have very much hope in the Lord Jesus Christ. And that is sad. So sad. And we made it through verse 8, I think, last week. So we're going to pick up with verse 9. And I'm going to read verse 9, and then we're going to go to Romans 9. Because here's the first place in Isaiah that it's quoted in the New Testament. And it just happened to be Romans 9. Okay, so let's go back and read it again. I want to read a verse or two in front of 9 to get you kind of up to date. We'll go back to 7. We covered these 7 and 8 last week. It says, your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate as overthrown by strangers. You know, we talked about it a little bit, how desolate these places are when the war is going on, and these people are overtaking property and land, and they pillage and burn, and because it's not their home, and they're not planning to stay there any longer. And then this is the way, as Jehovah looks at it, this is the way he sees it. And he says in verse 8, and the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard, and as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. And, you know, there's a lot there that we went over also. It talks about a cottage. In a cottage, I've got it right here in my notes. It's a booth made out of reeds to protect the grapes after they've been picked against the sun until the grapes are brought in and worked up and depressed. So they need some place in the shade that the grapes, you know, won't get hot, start to ruin. And then it talks about a lodge in a garden of cucumbers. And when they had gardens over there, it was a platform made on four poles, and it was sheltered by leaves and sacking. And it was a place for a worker to get out of the rain if they were working in the garden and a rain cloud come up or whatever. And so it was a kind of a place of refuge in a large garden. And these places get left at the end of the harvest from the garden. They're left to the elements there, and they redo it, I guess, again the next year. And so that was the way God was looking at Jerusalem. It was like it become desolate or become overrun, or it become such a state that nobody wanted to be there. And he was going to change all this. This is God's plan to change all this stuff. Then we get to verse 9, and here's our lesson. And it says in verse 9, and if you have a companion Bible, you'll see that the bold print is there, and which gives you the understanding,
a really nice feature, in
that it's used somewhere else. And it says, except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah. Now, the very first word you see there is except. And except there is, and it expresses the condition simply. So this is God speaking through Isaiah And so Isaiah is passing it on. So he says, except the Lord of hosts hath left unto us a very small remnant. The Lord of hosts is there. If you go and you look it up, it is the word Sabbath. Sabbath, the Lord of hosts, has left unto us, or has preserved unto us, a very small remnant or a very small seed. So, again, you find that many times God's people get down to where there's only just a few left in a certain situation. But even fewer, you know, when you talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. Because it says, as Sodom, and we should have been likened unto Gomorrah. So it says we should have been as Sodom. And Sodom was destroyed by fire and all that was within Sodom. It rained fire and brimstone from heaven. And the two individuals that God sent, the angels or whatever they were, they had a time when they were in Sodom. These Sodomites, they wanted to take them out and have sex with them. And even Lot's, was down there, and they were going to get Lot away from there. And so Lot's daughters had married two men from one of these cities. And so Lot lost his, he lost his son-in-laws there. And he lost his wife in leaving, because there was conditions there in Gomorrah that you're not to look back.
Yeah.
And when Lot's wife looked back, we know what happened there. And it said, we should have been like unto Gomorrah. So, these people, if you look at their actions and deeds, they didn't try to hide what they were doing. They didn't try to hide anything. And the fact is that you can't hide from God anyway.
Sounds like today.
Yeah. So they didn't try to hide what they felt was okay or all right. And even Lot lost both sons-in-law because they too would not believe what was being said. And evidently they should have been around Lot long enough to have heard and realized why Lot was there, because he came with Abraham out of the Ur of Chaldee, in which God told him not to bring his family, but Lot tagged along for whatever reason. But these folks that were there, they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe that things were going to take place there that they couldn't understand. So turn with me. Keep your finger there. Put something in Isaiah 1. We're going to come right back. But I want to go to Romans 9. And this is where this first occurrence of the words of Isaiah is found in the New Testament. Now, it isn't the first place, but it's the first occurrence as the book of Isaiah unfolds. Now, we know that there's places in Matthew and Mark and Luke, probably John too, that refers back to Isaiah. But anyway, I want to go to Romans 9, and I want to look at verse 22. And we're going to read 23 through 29. And it says this, what if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long-suffering the vessels of wrath fitted to destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, which he had afore or before prepared unto glory. And then verse 24 says, even us, whom he hath called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. And then he quotes, and then here in Romans, there's a quote of Isaiah first. Hosea first. And he said also in Hosea, I will call them my people which are not my people, and her beloved which was not beloved. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living God. And you know, we've been in Hosea more than one time, and we realize that he's talking about those folks that God choose to call. Then he gets to Romans 9:27, where it says, Isaiah also cried concerning Israel, though the number of children of Israel be as the sand of the seas, a remnant shall be saved. For he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because a short work will the Lord make upon the earth. Because the earth was not what Jehovah had considered to be right anymore. And that's what we're dealing with in chapter 1 of Isaiah. And he says, and as Isaiah said before, and here's the quote again, except the Lord of Sabaoth hath left us a seed, we had been as Sodom or Sodomah, and had been made like unto Gomorrah. So you see, they were all destroyed there except the ones that came out from the destruction on the fact of belief, on the fact that God was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. He was going to make for the rest of the world an example. And he did. And he says, and this is a lesson for us, that we ought to look back and take this as an example unto ourselves, that God will save a remnant when he needs to, but he can destroy the lot if it's his desire. So there's a lot of difference between a desire and a need. And certainly God has the power to issue both in instant. So that's the first one that you find in Isaiah 9:1-9, and it's quoted in verse 29 here in Romans 9. And it's the first one that we've come up with in the chapter. I think that's the only one in chapter 1 as far as that goes. So turn with me back to Isaiah 1:10. And Isaiah 1:10 says, hear the word of the Lord, ye rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, ye people of Gomorrah. So the word of the law, Lord, is necessary. When the word of the Lord speaks, He doesn't speak just to be talking.
Yep.
He speaks because there's something going to take place. And so this is what we got here. So hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. And give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. So this is what it boils down to. In verse 10. And I'll have to find my notes because I wrote it. A week or two ago, and it says go 3 pages back on my notes. Now, boy, ain't I got good notes.
At least you're organized.
Okay. Found it. And it says in verse 10, hear the word of the Lord, or hear the words of Jehovah. So he says, this is instructions here. Give ear to, or heed. He wanted them to hear the articulate, exact words of Jehovah. Ye rulers of Sodom. Rulers that were ruling in the day as it was in Sodom when they were destroyed. And they were told what was going to take place, but they believed it not. They didn't give the ear there. And then it says, give the ear unto the law of our God. And hear, God here is he loves him. Because it's for those that weren't, that didn't have a covenant relationship with God. You see, so that's different. So you find that this talking about the law of our God, you can find it 12 times in Isaiah. So give ear or hear. And it refers back to the 5 books of the law, the Pentateuch. But it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't quote the Pentateuch exactly the way it is, but it refers back to it. He says, you people of Gomorrah, that was where God, or where Lot's son-in-laws were from. He's saying, you better not act as those in Gomorrah act. You know, you better listen. Because I have now given you an example. You have an example to go by. Now, let me see if I can get back to my other notes. And that, boy, I didn't know when I did these I was going to do it that way, but... Here we go.
You'd rewrote them on the front page.
So, verse 11 is a call to hear these instructions that we found in verse 10. In verse 11 says, to what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifice unto me? He asked the question. What is the purpose? To what purpose or to what use is the great number of your actions or your sacrifices unto me? Why am I taking the time to hear these things? You are so far down. So I have no joy from this. Basically. You know. Saith the Lord. And these are Jehovah's words. And he says in the rest of this thing, I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts, and I delight not in the blood of bullocks or lambs or of he goats. So they were still coming back, and they were still doing the sacrifices that were given to them by law to do, but they weren't living, and they weren't doing as God would have them to be doing and living. And so all this was just a waste of time to God, you see. And so this is what we're looking at. So it says here that by his words, the objects and actions here are at best just hollow things. They don't have any meaning to them as far as God is concerned, because they haven't made these sacrifices in the manner and the light by which they need to be taken by God. You know, and he said, and I delight not, or I find no pleasure in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of he-goats or in any of these religious observances that you're putting up before me. So when God's saying this to people that are supposed to know better and do better, you begin to get the feeling that he is fed up. But you know, God doesn't give up. And he doesn't give up on those that he chose.
That's why I think it...
He might have, could have, and should have.
In Romans 9:28, you quoted there a while ago.
Yeah.
For he will finish the work.
Yeah.
And I think that's indicative of the whole setting up of Israel again and everything. There's
right.
things that have to be finished.
Right.
Because he said he would do that.
He would do that. Okay. So he says, I find no pleasure in religious observances such as the blood of bulls, lambs, or he goats. He's just not happy with them in that situation. Then we get to verse 12. And he says, when you come to appear before me, who hath required this at your hand to tread my courts? Who? So he says, when you come to appear before me. So there were times in a year when they were summoned to appear before God. You know, they had the days and all this, and he'll get to the days here in a minute, but they were going to have to go before the face of Jehovah, whether they knew it or not. Whether they could see him or not. They could certainly see them. And they may not have been able to see Jehovah. But you can't hide. You can't hide from God. You remember a few weeks ago when we were talking about either in Ecclesiastes or Proverbs or somewhere before that, somebody was talking about that they couldn't hide in their own house because God was there. Mm-hmm. You know, you think, well, you know, I'm under the roof, and what I do in my own home is my business. God's there. He's everywhere. Everywhere. 1:13. So he says, bring no more vain oblations. Incense is an abomination to me. The new moon and Sabbaths. The calling of assemblies. He says, I cannot away with. It is iniquity. Even the solemn meetings. So he's poured it on here. This indictment is just growing and growing and growing. So he says, bring no more vain oblations or evil oblations. And oblations there is 4503. And in the Hebrew, it's menkal. And this is donations or gifts. And it says, bring no more sacrificial offerings. And the offerings that he's talking about here is usually the bloodless offerings. Because there's many different kinds of offerings. And I think back to Cain and Abel with this thing also here too. He also says, incense is an abomination unto me. And abomination is 8441. And it's to Abba, to Abba. And it's abomination is something disgusting. It is disgusting before God. Jehovah. Then he talks about the new moons, 2320 in the strong. And it has to do with the months. You know, there's a new moon every month. And that's kind of a symbol of somewhat of starting over. And the Jewish people were taught about these things, about seasons and times. And all this thing that God had set these things in perpetual motion, and they come around one right after the other. And he talks about the new moons, the months, and also Sabbaths, 76 in the strong. And to break it down, basically, there's a lot of things dealing with Sabbath. But to break it down, that it was a day of rest. You know, on the seventh day God rested. And so it was set up that man do the same thing. And then he says, the calling of assemblies. And in the Hebrew it's mikrah. And it's to call to a convocation. Or to call to a meeting. And certainly the children of Israel had assemblies to attend or to go to. And he says, at the following of this, he says, I cannot away with. And when you break that down and you look at the notes in the Companion Bible, it comes out like this. I am not able to endure or to put up with it anymore.
Yeah, I had all I could take.
He says, that's all, you know, I got all I want. Something's going to have to change. And I think we can see that in this thread of this study that we're doing here, that God is fed up with these folks doing things the way they want to do it and doing it in a manner that's not pleasing to God, and he's not going. There's going to come a time and a place when he's going to make short work out of it. I believe that's what was said in Romans 9.
Yep.
I'm not able to endure to put up with it. He says, it is iniquity. Even the solemn meetings is iniquity. And one word for iniquity is the word vanity. You know, we've just been through Ecclesiastes. And vanity is emptiness, and it's something that is very unsatisfactory. And that's what iniquity is. It is emptiness and unsatisfactory. It is of no use and no place. He said, your vain assemblies are your evil assemblies, because the assemblies that you call are of no good. They're just serving any purpose except that you feel like you've done your duty. And God's not willing to accept that. In 14, because from 11 to 15 gives you all these things, folks, and it just goes on and on. And in 14, it says this, your new moons and your appointed feast, my soul hateth. How much more blunt can it get? They are a trouble unto me. I am weary to bear them.
Don't you think that every time they try to do those things in the state of belief they were in, disbelief, it's like hypocritical. It just made God want to throw up.
It's kind of like pouring gas on fire.
Exactly.
You know,
that's what it was all about.
God ever, certainly, the covenant God had every right to
wipe them out.
Just pull the plug, if you will. He said, your new months or your new moons and your appointed feasts, they fix time or seasons for these things. He says, my soul hateth. And in the notes there said, I emphatically abhor.
Yeah.
It is an abhorrence unto me. I'm fed up. They are a trouble unto me. And trouble here is 2960. And it said, they, the feast, are a trouble. And trouble is taraka, meaning a burden unto me. And he says, I am weary to bear them. And weary there is 38:17. And that word is law, and in the Hebrew is lawal. Like it's pronounced L-A-W-A-W. And any time you see a Hebrew word with L-A-W in front of it, you better look at it twice or more, because it is something that God has laid out. And he says, I am weary. The word there in the Strong's in 38:11 is disgusted. To bear or to accept them. And to bear is 53:75. He just couldn't accept anything else. Then we get to 50. And he says, look at this, folks. And when you spread forth your hands, I will hide mine eyes from you. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. So, this is the kind of the capstone of that indictment, if you will. And when, or even when, you spread forth your hands or you pray. You know, we've seen these prayers, especially on television, where people spread forth their hands, they stand up, and holding wide your hands. He says, when you do that, and you hold wide your hands, he said, I'll hide my eyes from you. I don't even want to see it. Because they're not doing it in earnest. They're not doing it in a way that's pleasing to God. He said, I'm going to turn my face and my ears away. I've had it. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. And when you make many prayers, it's multiply your prayers, because evidently they were doing it over and over and over again. And it wasn't.
That's why I say they were going through all the motions. They just wouldn't know.
But it wasn't pleasing. It wasn't pleasing to God. And so God says, I won't hear it. I can. Deafness is an attribute for me.
Yeah.
I can tune it out. You know, it's like the volume on the TV. He could just tune it out. And he said, your hands are full of blood. And that's basically what a man does with his hands when he takes a life. He sheds blood. And that's what God sees when he looked at these people that were holding their hands out trying to pray to him. And so it seems as if, you know, all of these things, and there was a great, when you go back and you look at it, it's a big list. And certainly none of these things God cared for. From 11 through 15 is a very big act of things that need to be changed. So he says in 16, wash you, make you clean, put away the evil from your doings, from before mine eyes, cease to do evil. So he's changed gears a little bit here, see. So he's told them now what he really disliked about what they were doing. And he says, wash you. And that is to lave, and it's 73:64 in the Strong's, and it means to have a lave or a pan, a place to wash.
Lavatory.
Or bathe. He says, wash you, bathe you, bathe yourself. Make you clean. And this is, has the idea of baptism. To become innocent. That's 21:35, the word clean is in the Strong, and it means to be found innocent, be found clean. It says, put away the evil, the raw of your doing, or of your labor, from before mine eyes. Put an end to this evil stuff. I don't want the evil part of it. I abhor it. It's an abomination. And he says, cease to do evil. Have nothing to do with this. I believe it's Appendix 44:8, where evil there is raw. And have nothing to cease. I have nothing to do with this evil. Move away from it. The ability to do that is yours. And he says, learn to do well. In verse 17. So you can begin to see how he's turning this over. He's told them now how bad it is, and he's trying to get them to turn over to get into another situation of cleanliness and get away from this evil stuff. Learn. 39:25. Lawmad. And lawmad means to goad or to use the rod. Like you goad an ox to get him to do things. And eventually, it'll take him a little while, but eventually he will learn. And he'll learn to do what his owner wants him to do. And to do well, or to do the thing that the owner desires. 31:90. And that's Yotam. And it means to be happy, to be successful, to be right, or to be beautiful. So if you learn to do well, then these things become a different look to God. And he says, seek judgment. There in 17 also. Learn to do well, seek judgment. And the seek judgment there, judgment is 49:41, and it is mishpal. To seek there is to diligently look for. If you're seeking for something, and if you're truly wanting to find something, you're going to diligently look for it. And here he's talking about seeking judgment. And a 49:41 judgment, it means a verdict. There's to be a verdict. And a verdict can be a favorable verdict or an unfavorable verdict. And it also looks at as a sentence or a formal degree. Decree.
I don't want you to take her now.
And he also says to relieve the oppressed. And if you give somebody relief, you're giving them freedom. Or have the freedom to. And the oppressed of those under tyranny or servitude. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about those that were under servitude or tyranny. And I believe it was Solomon who said that it's better for a person never to be born than to be under tyranny, be under somebody that wouldn't treat them properly. And so in 17, you've got that. Give freedom, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless. And to judge is to make things right. You never want to go into a court of law where you won't get the right judgment. And to judge is to make right by these fatherless, these orphans. And so we find that in all stages down through the ages, they were those that were left orphaned, those that were left without a father. And somebody needs to be on their side. And so this is what God is asking them to do. And he also says, plead for the widow. And that is to give help for all kinds of the helpless and the bereaved people. So the orphans or the fatherless and the widows need all the help that man can give them. And so that's what he was telling them here in 17. Learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. Now, we come to verse 18. And when I look at my notes, it says to go back 4 pages. And it says, Susan, what kind of notes are you taking here? Well, I was going to do this another way and decided not to, so we're just taking them as we come to them, and I had them written on different pages. So, verse 18. So, God here is trying to do some rectification, to put right or to correct these things that he's been talking about here, especially verses 11 through 15. So he says in verse 18, come now and let us reason together with the Lord. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. So he says, come now. And this come now is to come with an open mind and open ears and an open heart. Let us reason together. Let's put the matter right or settle this situation of matter, the matter of sin. Now, sin is always going to be with us as long as the father of sin is around. But we need to deal with it as it comes to us. So, here, I think God is saying this, let's reason together. Here it concerns us as putting an end to all reasoning rather than an invitation to begin to reason. So God said, you know, let's put an end to this sin thing. Let's get rid of the sin thing. And we won't have to go through all this again. We've done been through it. You've seen where my side falls. My side falls on the part where I don't want any more of it. And so, this is not an invitation to begin to reason. Let's just get it out, call it what it is, and get it over with. Okay. It says, though your sins or your transgressions, this chatter, be as scarlet, 8744, and that word is Shoni, like the Shoni Indian, means red or crimson. They shall be as white as snow. And Shelag is the word for snow there. And that means pure snow or uncontaminated, because sin gives you the idea or the understanding of contamination. Sin came into the world to contaminate God's perfect garden. When the Shining One showed up, he did his part of contamination.
And caused the blood to be shed to cover their eyes. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah. And so this is what it said. Although your sins be as scarlet, when it's taken care of, they're going to be as white as snow. They're going to be uncontaminated at that point. And this kind of gives you the idea of what the Messiah is going to do when the Messiah comes. You see, it hasn't been really mentioned by name here, but this is a kind of an inference to it. It gives you the understanding that there's something coming down the road. in that situation. Okay. Said, though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. Though they be, or as they were, red like crimson, they shall be as wool, or white like pure snow. You know, when wool is washed, if they put some kind of lye in it, that wool will become like, almost like uncontaminated. Okay. And so that's what we got in verse 18. They shall be as wool. Now I can go back to 19. Now I'm back writing my notes again, so, and I'm about out of time. And it says in 19, if you be willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. Okay, so you see, he gets back to the land again. And I forgot to turn my monitor off. If you be willing and obedient, and this is an invitation by Jehovah.
He already said, let's reason together.
Yeah.
He's extended the hand.
Okay, this is his invitation. Should you seek divine grace, if you be willing and obedient, should you seek my divine grace, and this is my invitation, you shall eat the good of the land. So you see, God will grant to you what his creation offers as to an earthly vessel, as to man, because we're all earthly vessels. Okay? So when we look at this verse 19, we see that we'll eat the good of the land. Well, we're earthly vessels. And if we don't eat the things that grows on the land, and if we don't eat the animals that eats the stuff that grows off the land, then we're not going to be here very long. Because that has to be replenished basically daily. You might can go a day or two, or a few days, but you're not going to go very long. See, when my dad's kidneys failed, and he was in the hospital, they told us they couldn't give him dialysis anymore, and whatever he took in to eat would be poison to his system, because they couldn't get it out. And he lasted 22 days. He didn't eat anything. And that's how long it took him to pass on. And so, you know, if you be willing and obedient here in 19, if you decide to seek divine grace from God, then, and He allows you to eat of the good of the land, then you're going to survive until something else does you in. So here, there is an invitation from Jehovah that God will grant you what His creation offers. It's His creation. And He can certainly offer it to you if He so desires. And I guess we can stop here, because I got two more pages of notes to go with me. We ain't going to make it. But we're getting down to a point where we can finish this chapter off, and I want to do five verses of the next chapter, because this is where the two places where the word walk goes, and then we'll start picking up with our walk situation from that on. So we're going to stop at 19. Today, and we'll pick up with 20 and go on there, because with 20, here man can refuse the invitation from Jehovah, and there's repercussions from that. But we'll go back and we'll pick up with 19 next time where the invitation was given. And then we'll deal with 19 and 20 first because it says if you refuse. So there's things that goes along with both sides of that. Because Jehovah is a covenant God. And his agreements were made conditional and unconditional with the nation of Israel. And this is what we're talking about. We're talking about Israel here in a relationship with the other nations concerning Judah and the city of God. And this is what it's about and how, you know, and how they treated the city when they had overrun it and took it over and sent everybody else away. So we'll pick it up there the next time. And I know this is a lot of information, but yet I think it's something that we ought to see, especially the first chapter here, and to see that God is moving, made an indictment, and then he tells them why this indictment is in place because of their situation and because the people there are not doing the things. They're doing the things, but they're not doing it in the manner and in the way that he's going to accept it, because they're still a sinful bunch. And so he's now, we've gotten to a place in chapter 1 where he's trying to rectify this and to get everything going back to the land again, and get the people back. And that's his plan and purpose for them at that time. And so I felt like it was good that we need to go over that. And I've gotten a lot out of it. If nobody else does, I certainly have, as trying to sit before you and say, yeah, let's make some sense out of this. And so we've got to this point here. So we'll close and get off the fire channel and and have prayer and open up the mic. Ron, take it over, son.